Welcome to the City Cup of Eugene's March 3rd, 2017 program, Building Communities for People of All Ages. This is the 21st program in our current programming for 2016-2017 programming year. My name is Juan Carlos Valle, City Club Board President. Support for City Cup of Eugene is provided by our members and sponsors, including Levas Cobb, established in 1995. Levas Cobb is one of the oldest and experienced law firms in Oregon. So, the movement toward age-friendly communities is growing, in large part because of baby boomers and millennials all want a community that is a great place to grow up, raise children, and to grow old. What's that all about? Today's program will bring new insights and common denominators to very different generations, creating a successful society. The key impetus for the efforts is that the population of America is getting older. In 1900, 4% of the population was 65 or older. By 2050, 20% of the population will be 65 or better. The movement to create communities that are age-friendly focuses on how the economic, physical, and societal environmental can be improved to address the needs and maximize the assets of an aging population for the benefit of all. Our panelists today will help us bring clarity to our mission. Jerry Cohen has been an AARP first state director since 1996. He previously managed legislative and regulatory advocacy for the AARP in the five Midwest states. He holds a BA degree from the University of Wisconsin-Madison and a JD degree from the Washington University, St. Louis, and an MPA degree from the University of Missouri, Kansas City, with concentration in gerontology and health administration. The second panelist today is Mayor Christine Lumber. She became Springfield's 37th mayor in 2010. She was elected to the Springfield City Council in 1999 and served Ward 1, the gateway area, for more than a decade. Mayor Lundberg attended the University of Oregon as well as San Diego Community College in 2015, and City of Springfield joined AARP's network of age-friendly communities. We are very lucky today because we actually get to have a moderator today. This is somebody I've come to be friends with and admire for not only her career, but also her legacy into public service. And of course, I'm talking about Brenda Wilson from the LCOG. Please help me welcome Brenda.
Well, thank you so much. I have no idea how Juan Carlos Valle found all that stuff out. That's a long, long time ago. So, thank you so much. As he said, my name is Brenda Wilson. I'm the executive director of the Lane Council of Governments. We are a member organization, and we serve our 34 members throughout Lane County, helping them make Lane County a better place to live, work, and do business. One of our divisions is Senior and Disability Services, where we provide a variety of services to seniors and adults with disabilities 18 and older. Our main goal is to help seniors and adults with disabilities live independently and with dignity in their own homes. And so that's our mission, and we take that very seriously. So today, I am joined by you, Springfield's Mayor, Christine Lundberg, and by AARP Oregon State Director Jerry Cohen. And they're going to talk about what it means to have a livable community. So almost everyone wants to live in a livable community where we can feel safe, where there are good schools, good public transportation, where the cost is affordable, and where we can engage with our community in events like this. But what makes a neighborhood or a community feel safe? What makes a neighborhood or community a place where people want to live? Is it affordable housing, good schools? Is it where we feel safe? And those are some of the questions that Mayor Lundberg and Jerry Cohn are going to answer today. So I'll invite them up here. And how we're going to work this today is I'll ask some leading questions to get the conversation going, and then we'll take a break and open it up for some questions. So we have Mayor Christine Lundberg and Jerry Cohn. I'll let them get settled, and then we'll get started. It's this button right here. Okay, let's get started. We'll get right into our topic, and we'll start off today by asking each panelist to briefly tell us what it means to build a community for people of all ages, and we'll start with you, Mayor Lundberg.
So I think what I want to start is, one time my volunteering revolved primarily around very young children, and that's because I had very young children. And now a lot of my priorities have shifted to, oh my gosh, I'm getting old. And so I wanted to realize that I need to encompass everyone, and I have even elderly relatives still, so I realize the challenges. So it's what it means to myself and the city of Springfield to be an age-friendly community is that we have a way to make everyone feel at home. One of our goals for the council is to have a hometown feel. And our citizens have said that by 90% they want to have that hometown feel and they value it. So it is very important for us to maintain that. And to do that, we have to make every single person that lives in the community or visits the community feel welcome. And we try very hard to do that. We need to understand who we are and who we want to be. So we're working always to identify everyone who is in the community so that we can work together to find solutions that address livability in our community. And as we do that, then the council can establish policies that fit in terms of whether or not we're talking housing or transportation, and that we can then make some deliberate choices about our neighborhoods and how they're set up, and that we address all of our community needs. And so now that I have the perspective of raising a family in the community and working with my elderly relatives and all of those others in the community that need to feel that they're not isolated. And it's very important to us, and we're working very hard to address those needs.
Jerry?
I can actually stand up and look through the light. I'll just start with Juan Carlos hit something that I think of real estate and developers that say it's location, location, location. Well, it's demographics, demographics, demographics. So as you pointed out the numbers, by 2030, on average, we'll look at least one out of five, if not more in some areas, that are age 65 plus. Now, I'm getting a little ahead of the game because I turned 65 this year. So it's been an interesting ride of 40 years in aging and disability services and realizing, so now I'm old? And that's part of it. As the mayor hit, we're all aging, and we age from the moment, in fact, you can argue before we're born. So the real issue and challenge then is looking at numbers. So let me step back. Why is AARP engaged in all this? Well, it is numbers, and it isn't just 65 plus. It isn't just 85 plus. Our membership, we're a nonprofit membership organization, age 50 plus, although you can be any age. And 38 million members currently in AARP, over 500,000 here in Oregon, over 100,000 here in Lane County area. So it's numbers, and it's growing. That's just the reality. We've taken a keen interest in that. But it also back to what makes for good individual aging and societal aging. It does get around to how are we addressing issues not only of health, but social engagement, mental health, accessibility, and things that make for quality of life. So AARP has embraced from the moment we were founded by Ethel Percy Andrus, an educator, and a lot of it is staying engaged in terms of learning, which is why I'm glad you're all here to both learn and to challenge us, and that is the ability to stay and get engaged with purpose. So our founder looked at that in terms of creation of AARP. The other thing that I did want to emphasize is we look at it multifaceted. So it isn't just do we educate, do we advocate, We also engage and promote service, community service. And so that's something I'll hope to touch upon a little later today as well. So thank you.
Great. Thank you, Jerry. I think you've explained why AARP is interested in the livable communities issues. Can you explain a little bit more about what the network of age-friendly communities is? And let's focus in on that.
Pop back up. Well, I'm going to give you a very brief history lesson. The World Health Organization, back in 2006, began to also recognize demographics and numbers. And to be blunt, while we are concerned of the aging of America, many countries, look at Japan and Europe, and you know, nations like Italy are actually experiencing even more of that boom and bubble of, in terms of a much older average age population. So the World Health Organization, I started to identify various domains of different areas, and I think the mayor may best address that because of why the city of Springfield is engaged in this as well. But in looking at these different aspects of what makes for a community that thrives no matter what age, but particularly as we age, the World Health Organization came up with, in essence, a competition, asked and looked at cities around the world. There was only one city in the United States that was initially designated in 2008, 2009 as an age-friendly city or community. Guess where in the United States? Portland, Oregon. I had the privilege of being involved in that because Portland State University's Institute on Aging was engaged on that very issue through WHO. We made the case that while no city is perfect, we were making strides in terms of how to address different aspects of those domains. So that's how we got started. And it wasn't until 2012 that the World Health Organization thought maybe we better push a little bit more aggressively in the United States. And that's where my organization, AARP, stepped up and said, we will take the responsibility of working with and identifying communities that wish to follow some guidelines to become designated age-friendly. Age-friendly network is what we call it. And so as a consequence, we launched that. And I have to make sure I have the exact number, but because every day I learn another community has signed on. We have 145 communities around the country. Here in Oregon, Springfield, Portland, Multnomah County, Newburgh has just joined as well. And in addition, we've had some keen interest by Metro, the sort of council government, but not quite like LCOG. So at any rate, we're pleased with the growth here, but in particular, across the nation, folks are recognizing why this is important. What it provides are tools and information. We try to engage our membership as best we can to promote and engage with communities that sign on board as well to provide advice and to take active role in the implementation of those plans.
Thank you, Jerry. Mayor Lundberg, I know that the city of Springfield became just the second city in Oregon to join the network of age-friendly communities, and you did so in 2014, and you are currently working on an age-friendly action plan. Can you talk a little bit about why the city of Springfield wanted to join the network?
Well, the first thing I want to say is AARP is a very aggressive organization, and I appreciate that. That's the one thing that is very helpful in terms of implementing anything. So I know it was Betty and someone that came and visited me and brought me materials about age-friendly communities. And when I actually sat down and looked at it, and I read, and I'll read the eight domains, it's outdoor space and buildings, transportation and housing. Oh, are we going
through?
Oh, click.
About the clicker.
Trying to click.
Okay. Maybe just hit enter instead.
So transportation goals, housing, social participation, respect and social inclusion, civic participation and employment, communication and information, and community health services. And I thought, wow, those are all the same goals that we want for the community. And there's a mechanism whereby we can put together an action plan that then takes a look at how our age groups are doing inside of those goals, and that we can zero in on things that we're doing well and we can be proud of, and things that we need to change. So I thought, this is great, because it's right in with what we're already doing, and if we can make it even better, that would be wonderful. And then when we're looking at codes and we're looking at transportation, we're looking at public safety, we can take our plan and compare the recommendations from that plan as to whether or not we're actually implementing those things in the work that we're doing. So that was the biggest reason why I wanted us to be part of that. And then, of course, it was just plain a perfect fit for us. And there, and when you're recognized by AARP, you get recognized nationally. And it's never a bad thing on your city website to have some connection to AARP. I just think it's a wonderful thing. And what I've also learned is, doggone it, they just have this huge network of great ideas. So we're specifically looking at housing. And I get constant emails from AARP about, oh, look at this style of housing. Oh, this housing is way different than that. Or it's so innovative. And so I'm getting a great deal of ideas about what the city can do to actually take a look at addressing a livable city and downtowns and transportation. So I pass all of those emails along to the appropriate city staff and to counselors so that we can start thinking outside the box and utilize all of the resources that AARP brings to us and being an age-friendly community. Thank you.
So, Mayor, we're going to dig a little bit deeper. How do these efforts that you're describing actually translate into creating a community for people of all ages?
Well, some of the things that I know that are within the goals are to increase just the connectivity within the community. And I'll give an example. At some point, I went to my accountant because, you know, I'm getting all of everything that you're supposed to get together. And the very question he asked me is, he asked, can you stay in your home? And I stopped for a minute and I thought about it and I thought, well, I have two kind of, I live by a Safeway, I live by a Fred Meyer, I live by all of these. I mean, there's an accountant nearby, there's a dentist, there's the MX services nearby. I have a bike path that I can get to other things, or I can take a bike and go for a ride. And one of the important things is I sold my other house, which was down the street, I sold it to my son. So I have a son down the street. So I just call him when I say, I'm going on the roof now. So you might want to either come down and put the moss control on for me, or be ready to take me to the hospital if I fall off the ladder. So there were all of the components of what makes a home for me to be able to stay in it. And I know if an accountant's asking me that, they're asking everyone else who tries to get their affairs in order. So that was an important connection that I made. So being an age-friendly community and creating that community involves a lot of the neighborhood issues. So we're working on, it's one of my big deals, is make things connect so that you can get people from point A to B. If your sidewalks are all bulging, it's not a great place to walk. If you can't get to the bus service because there's too much interference and you can't connect things, that's not good. If you don't feel safe when you're out on the streets, if you don't feel safe in your homes, all of these things are things that we're working on. And we have been working very hard on adding a diversity to our committees. We have a program of volunteers in the community. We have 171 active retirees in our volunteer program because we added a volunteer coordinator. We have 55 teenage volunteers in that mix, and I'm thinking those are the two perfect groups, because if I learned one thing, it was that teenagers like to hang out with each other, and that people in more of the retirement age, sometimes they want to spend time with people that, you know, share their interests. But when you mix them together, they're kind of the same group. So they're having fun together. So we have mixed the volunteers, and that's very important to us. We have lots of community events that we use our volunteers and are designed for people of all ages. And we're working very hard with our open spaces. We have an award-winning Park and Recreation District, Willamette Lane Park and Recreation District, and they have done amazing things. They have the adult center that addresses a lot of activities, and our parks are more and more open, and we have great sidewalks that you can walk all along the river now. If you haven't been to the Mill Race, please take the time to come over. Go all the way down the Mill Race, and then you can connect to the Willamette River and come all the way back. So just more and more, we are trying to make the community accessible for everyone.
Thank you, Mayor. So, Jerry, the mayor just talked about some efforts going on in the city of Springfield, and you mentioned earlier that more communities are joining the network. So can you talk a little bit about what you are seeing in other cities?
Well, a couple of things. First, I'd like to frame some of what the mayor shared as both what is good for me, and then I look at we, and that's we plural in terms of society. I had a conversation with one or two of you before this started about simple things I can do for myself when it comes to looking at staying in my home. So, you know, how many of us think about, you know, doorknob versus the lever now? And I don't need those throw rugs. I need to look at ways to avoid tripping and falling in the home. Things that we sometimes, the simple things, the inexpensive things that we need to be anticipating and looking at. At the same time, as the mayor pointed out, it's looking at broadly how you provide connections in community. So what we're seeing nationally is quite a bit of innovation when it comes to, for example, looking at planned housing, I call it kind of small housing and space, using space appropriately. Something I remember when I started in aging services a few years and at Comover ago was granny flats or echo housing or ADUs, accessory dwelling units, but where, in the case of the mayor, you have the sun's down the road. Our daughter and we tease about, well, she actually has a small dwelling unit that, while she rolls her eyes right now, perhaps mom and dad, or maybe just mom or just dad, will end up living there. Seriously, there are some very good creative ways to think about that. The use of technology in a positive way in terms of ways to connect and work together. I did want to cite something, and I don't know, Mayor, if you were at the Mayor's 85th annual winter meeting of the U.S. Mayors, with so many meetings and so many things going on. And, of course, this winter, perhaps you may not have been able to get out. But AARP conducted a survey at that event. So I wanted to highlight because it showcases not only what's some innovation, but what are the problems. About 108 community mayors from communities across different sizes across the nation responded to that survey. What are you finding when it comes to livable, age-friendly, or as a population shifts? Most of those mayors, we didn't just frame it as age-friendly. We just framed it as what are the most important issues you're dealing with. And 90% reported that they were dealing with issues of aging in their cities or their communities at large. Back to numbers. So, Juan Carlos, you know, it is all around demographics. But here's some key issues that were identified and how they're trying to deal with it. One, easy access to health care and supportive services. So when you say health care, that's great. We all know go to the doctor, go to the hospital, whatever. But we often forget the social supports that you need, particularly respite care for family caregivers. And most care is provided by family when it comes to caregiving. So those sorts of things we learned are a high priority among mayors. A second area was around access to physical access in, I'll call it attainable, not just affordable housing. And we all do know that in many places in the country, and certainly we're experiencing in Oregon, housing shortages and or affordability. So it's like either the market itself doesn't provide much for, I can pay for it, but I can't get it, or, gosh, I can't even afford to buy, or rent, and that's the other part of this. Having location, having your housing close to transportation or, you know, ways that I can get to store, entertainment, community services, it's back to enjoying the place I live in and connection. Those all were high priorities, back to mobility, transportation options. The last one, and it's something that I don't want to sweep under the rug at all, is about safety. Police presence and communication, police and community residents working together to promote a sense of safety and security. Because you can have all these other nice things, but if I don't feel safe about getting out in community, then it isn't going to work. So that's something else that came out of that survey. Last and not least, AARP has framed it as the longevity economy. And that is, we think of the young creatives, and that's great. And my daughter is a millennial young creative and in Portland and Eugene, I'm sure in many areas. But we forget that the greatest driver in terms of small business job creators are actually those age 50 plus. And $7.1 trillion of economic value added by those that are working age 50 plus or that are consumers age 50 plus. So we need to start thinking about, back to numbers, the opportunity cost here of not really catering and looking at the demographic aging. So I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Jerry. Wow. So Mayor, Jerry mentioned a lot of things that came out of that survey. Very daunting, big efforts. And I know that many of those things that Jerry mentioned are important to the city of Springfield. So how does the city of Springfield intend to tackle some of those big issues? And he listed some of them. So access to health care and the supporting services, access to transportation, affordable, available, and as Jerry said, attainable housing in a safe community that has access and easy access to shopping and transportation and schools and other services. So can you touch on that?
Sure. So first, let me talk just a little bit about the transportation system, because I think everybody's probably aware that what we need is transportation funding. If for no other reason than we're trying to drive around on roads that all of our cars, if we're driving cars, are being, you know, you end up going through potholes or something, or the streets are just not set up very well. And for those that are walking, then we have to worry about our sidewalk system or our pathway system. If we're on a bike, we have to worry about whether or not, you know, you're on the street sharing lanes. It is worrying about crosswalks. I keep advocating, and I'm hoping we get them, is when I'm in D.C., I feel very comfortable, is the crosswalk, when the light turns so that you can go across, the timer starts right then, not when you have the last 10 seconds, which always makes me want to rush because I'm never sure if I'm going to get caught in the intersection when the light changes. But in D.C., you can have a 90-second crosswalk because they start the timer right away. I think that adds a level of safety. So it's one of my new, you know, I'm going to try and push to get that style because it makes it more comfortable to try and be getting around. We're working very hard, particularly on our Main Street corridor, because we've had fatalities along that corridor. It's a very important corridor to us to increase safety, to improve our transit service, to make it safer for everyone. So a couple of things that we're doing. One, when we get it done, it'll be our third Amex corridor, because that's a very heavily used corridor. But right now, you have to start on one side of the sidewalk to catch the bus, clear across the other side of the street. So if we can make that a much safer corridor, that would help. So we're working on that. We also, and I've been an advocate for it, is trying to move some of the bike traffic off of Main Street. So we're putting it on Virginia Daisy. So bicyclists can be off the street. So anyone can be take an alternative route and not have to be. So we're working on alternative routes. We're working on connectivity. We're working on specific corridors where we know we need to have a safer corridor. The Department of Transportation has granted us what we call arts grant, which makes it sound like we're going to put in art along the streets, but it's not for art. It's an all roads area. Help me out, Rob. All Roads Transportation Safety Grant.
Thank
so
you,
it's
Rob.
It's if you're driving and you notice the red and green light, you know, on the street, is there's reflectors around them now. Those weren't always true. So it makes the lights stand out better. So that's one thing it's doing. We're looking at medians, because medians help people to be able to get across particularly wider sections of roadway in a safer way. So the Department of Transportation is helping us do that. We put new downtown lighting downtown so that you can go downtown. We have lots of shops and restaurants down there, and we want everyone to feel safe, and that was the number one thing business owners wanted. So we've increased that and modernized our crosswalks in the process. And I named Springfield Police Department as our Employee of the Year because they're working very hard to address safety issues. Our community has supported a levy, and it's coming up again, and they continually support that levy to make sure that we have enough police officers out there, and we have a municipal jail, so if people don't want to behave, they can spend some time and think about it. And the Springfield Fire and Life Safety, there is a new response model that they're working on, which is showing improvements in reliability and response times throughout the metro area. And because it's one big fire and life safety department, we're working on looking at non-life-threatening calls that may not need a full fire truck and ambulance service. Eugene is piloting a program like that, and we're looking at more programs that, you know, can address some of those needs and keep the costs under control but be very efficient. And I'm really happy to say that CAHOOTS is going to be in Springfield through 2019. We thought they were going away next year. We would have to find money, but we're happy to say that we have them through 2019, and they do a great deal of help for mental health issues and other issues for folks that are needing that kind of help and don't need to just be put in a jail cell or end up in the hospital.
Thank you, Mayor. So an issue that I know that I'm hearing a lot about is housing. And right now, Oregon is facing one of our largest housing crises in history. And it isn't just about homelessness, so that's a topic, but it's about affordability, it's about accessibility, and as Jerry mentioned earlier, it's about attainability. And I know that for people, even people who can afford housing, it's not available. And so what can cities do to address this housing crisis? And Mayor Lundberg, we'll start with you.
Well, the first thing I'll touch on is our specific issue, which we have a two-month supply of homes for sale, and our rental vacancy rates are very low, and I know that's true of not only us. And when I listen to the national news and they say Portland is one of the most out-of-control areas to move to, my daughter's in D.C. She's looking to moving back here at some point. And she goes, Mom, it's more expensive to live in Portland than it is D.C. And that's, if you know the D.C. prices, that's pretty scary. So, but it has a trickle-down effect. And so I know that everyone I talk to and everyone that must deal with this is trying to deal with a housing crisis in terms of affordability, and that's affordable just about at every price point, is trying to get somebody in a first situation, have an affordable rental, have open rentals, because that affects the pricing. It's having enough housing. 41% of our households are paying more than 30% of their income on housing costs, and that's the standard that people use. If you're paying more than 30% on your housing, you're not able to meet the rest of your needs. So what are we doing? We have a program we call SHOP, and it's Springfield Housing Home Ownership Program. So if you want to buy a home and you can't afford a down payment, we help with with down payment assistance to be able to help folks that wouldn't be able to afford to get into a home but otherwise qualify get in. We have funding that we give to nonprofit providers, and they're all the same across the whole metro area, and then some, it's St. Vincent de Paul and NEDCO and some of the others that build affordable housing or take over housing that is perhaps run down or just needs to be rehabbed, and they come in and fix it up and then rent it out to people that they can get in and qualify for it. We're busy creating a housing strategy, and that's for people at all phases. So whether it's rentals or whether it's trying to do particular senior housing. Again, my elderly aunt and uncle, they're not necessarily low income, but they said Springfield doesn't have any housing for seniors. That's, you know, there's not any 55 plus kind of housing like they have in Eugene. So I looked around and went, they're right. Okay, so that's a whole category of housing that we need to look better at. So what we've directed staff to do is encourage the private sector growth, and we're doing that looking at our fees. We are prioritizing our community development block grant monies specifically around housing. We're not going to spend it on anything else for a while. We're expanding our emergency shelter programming and I'm trying to work more closely with particularly churches that come to me and say, hey, what can we do in the community? And I say, I have something you can do. Encouraging constructions of accessory dwelling units, and that's, you know, I get the good ideas off of the AARP website. And we have another source of funding that we share with Eugene. It's called home funding, and that is specifically to buy property, it's to buy housing, it's to build housing, it's to help vulnerable populations. And we are looking at creating a pilot project for permanent housing. I can't tell you all the details of it yet, but we're looking at what is a very creative form of housing that we could do that maybe even a young family could grow with. Maybe you can downsize it. Maybe you can break it up. I tell the story of, you know, the U-shaped house, which, you know, grandma lives here on one side, or grandpa, or whoever, and the rest of the family lives on the other side, but it's connected. But you can lock the door, which my kids would lock the door. So I have to stay in my own little apartment at the end. But it's meant so it's open. But so there's all kinds of variations out there, and I'm just amazed at what they are. So we're trying to encourage that we're trying to develop sustainable advanced wood product designs with our kids who need to graduate at a higher graduation rate, get them interested in trying to find solutions for using the natural resource we have here, and develop new styles of housing that fit the 21st century and the variations of all the living arrangements we could possibly come up with, and make it affordable, and make it community connected the way my neighborhood is, and I can get to things and be able to do all of those things and bring more business to town, because we have to have somebody that builds this kind of housing. So we are working now on a pilot project, which you should see hopefully within the next year, of an example of that style of housing. So we're very specifically working on that issue and trying to make it work from, you know, the child that's still in elementary school that gets the great ideas as they get to see what's happening, all the way to the senior that wants to stay living independently and use, tell me the home, where they come in, occupational therapists come in and tell you what you need, whether you need bars in the bathtub or whatever, so that you can stay living independently. So have this continuum of what housing should look like and be like, and create the community we want, and everybody gets to be successful at the end of the day.
Thank you, Mayor. So Jerry, Mayor Lundberg says she gets a lot of her ideas from AARP. Yeah. So are there additional ideas that and things that cities can do?
Well, I think, as the mayor pointed out also, there's no silver bullet in all this. There's a short-term crisis that we are experiencing, and not just in Oregon, but there are some long-term approaches that are going to clearly help. There are carrots and sticks, I'll put it that way. So certainly the carrots of tax credits, opportunities, and ways to promote development and incentivize the missing middle. You know, again, I don't qualify for low-income housing, but I need some decent housing, and I'm being squeezed right now out of the market. Now, some of the things that we've seen happen, and in AARP here in Oregon, we're engaged right now in the legislature, and it's controversial because carrot and stick, you know, we're promoting some ways to promote development and support that landlords and others like, but they also have some concerns about, well, are you now in the state giving the local government authority to decide about maybe no cause, taking away no cause evictions and or ways that we're responsible as landlords for pushing people out as we perhaps condoize or whatever properties. We believe in local rule in that regard, so we've been promoting several bills that would give much more authority. Right now, the communities, municipalities don't have that. The other thing is around property tax, back to retainable. As we age, if I'm so now I'm on a fixed income, even with Oregon's Measure 5 and Measure 47, 48, and 50, the reality is that I can defer, perhaps, if I qualify my property taxes, but I owe it. Are there ways that we can kind of unpeel the onion around our property tax system in a way that provides greater relief, in many states, a circuit breaker, so to speak? So those are a few of the things that we're tackling and looking at right now. But at the end of the day, it really is going to be taking an eye on the innovation and opportunities. April 11th and 12th here in Eugene, Dan Perelek, who's a national guru, who's been brought out by AARP before, is going to be here in town, in the area. And he's going to be doing a couple of events around the missing middle and innovative housing.
Great. Thank you. I think we're ready to take a break, right? So I have one more question, but I'll save it for after the break then. Yeah. So it looks like we'll take a break. Yeah. Thank you.
This is KLCC Eugene 89.7, KLCO Newport 90.5, 89.1 KLFR Reedsport, and at 88.1 KLFO Florence, KMPQ Roseburg, KLBR Bend. KLCC is a service of Lane Community College. We're on Facebook and Twitter and online at klcc.org.
Welcome back to the March 3rd City Club program. Building communities for people of all ages. Support for the City Club of Eugene is by members and sponsors, including Marilyn Melny, Public Relations Services, provides guidance and actions in media relations, social media, and community relations that will help you achieve your goals. And KLCC 89.7 FM, NPR Radio for Oregonians. I also want to take a minute to thank our host, the Baker Center, for providing and helping us with every Friday program, and KPFR for providing the office space. Now, we're lucky to also include Brenda Wilson to be our first questioner today, and so she'll be adding to the conversation. And when you're ready, Brenda, come to the microphone and ask the first question.
Okay. Thank you so much. So my question is specifically for Mayor Lundberg. Try not to make it too tough. So we've been talking about livable communities, and you've talked about why, you've talked about what, and you've talked about how. So what are some of the challenges that you see in moving towards a livable community in the future for the city of Springfield?
Well, maybe I'll take it from the perspective of we're trying to be very visionary about what we want in the way of livable and specifically around housing and transportation. You have lots of challenges in transportation because the bottom line is there just isn't any dang money, and the legislature doesn't seem to be able to just bite the bullet and say we're going to give enough money to take care of our streets and take care of our bridges and do all that. So that's one huge challenge. If we just had enough money to do this stuff, we would be fine. So there's that argument, though, about we charge more for driver's license. You know, how do we go about doing this? So anyway, I'm going to leave it to them. But we tried a gas tax and nobody wanted it. And they didn't want it in any of the other small communities. But that doesn't mean that the legislature shouldn't do it. So I'm just saying. Anyway, and then for our housing needs, I think we're at that point where we just need to figure out how to be more innovative, because we have one, housing shortage, and two, that creates housing that's not affordable. So how do we address making things more affordable? So we're taking a deep dive. We're completely redoing our development code, and we're trying to figure out ways to streamline processes so that we can build housing that doesn't have as many regulations, not that doesn't have as many, but it's simpler to put together, and it still fulfills being completely safe, but it also creates more affordability at all of the points in time. And we did a mobile home park with the state and Oregon Solutions, blessed by the governor, to look at mobile home parks, because that's one of the places that's very challenging. If we lose our mobile home parks, and ours are located, many of them, on the river. So that's prime redevelopment area, and suddenly there's not that much help for people that get displaced because a developer is coming in and completely redeveloping. So we have a toolkit now that can be used across the country as well as right here to try and help. And that was a personal project of mine, to make sure we have a way to help people that get displaced. So that's another issue. The first time we have a developer that comes in and says, I'm closing, I bought a mobile home park and I'm closing it. And then what do we do? Because many of those people are very vulnerable. So we're going to see how that works.
All right, so here's what we know for the next round, the first round of the questions from members. So we have about eight minutes to ask questions. So here's how we're going to do this. We're going to be doing each question 1 minute. That includes the question. That also means that I'm not going to let people to do a statement. Just please ask your question so that everybody behind you get to ask the same question. And if we run out of time, then we'll still ask you to write your questions and we'll send them to both of our panelists. With that in mind, go right ahead.
Hi, Marty Wilde, Lane County Medical Society. This is a question for Jerry. Many of the ways in which we could better accommodate age diversity in our neighborhoods require zoning and structural changes that the neighbors often oppose.
Yes.
Think of Cascade Manors expansion, MX expansion, crosswalk at 30th University. What can we do to build consensus around these structural changes to make our neighborhoods more all ages?
Well, thank you. And indeed, one of our greatest challenges, again, has been not my backyard, you know, the NIMBY reaction or the stereotypic. Well, you know, those younger folks coming in, they're going to change the character and that. Again, I don't have a silver bullet on it, but I do know that one of the best things we've seen has been where you're able to provide intergenerational service projects and communication with individuals. The other is actually trying to arrange and have individuals tour successful, you know, age-diverse communities. We experienced that where I live in Lake Oswego, where there's a lot of naysaying, and yet in one or two of the low-income housing projects that included a little bit of litigation or threats of litigation, we were able to get a number of the neighbors to actually come and see what other housing was and suddenly realize, oh, it's not quite what I stereotypically thought. And it isn't necessarily going to bring down the property value.
For Mayor Christine.
Next, go ahead.
The senior group, one of the biggest assets they have as a group is their volunteer services for the community. And you mentioned you had a coordinator. Is this a kind of an association of volunteers, or is the coordinator a city employee, or is that a volunteer also? And do they really work as a group and like an association of volunteers?
What we did is I kept getting people that wanted to volunteer, and I didn't have anyone to refer them to, so we actually hired a volunteer coordinator. And so any of the departments that need somebody to volunteer, you can go on the website and go, ooh, I want to work in the library, I want to work in the police department. So our volunteers are all intermixed. So that's how you get all your intergenerational, is because it depends on the interest area of the volunteer. That's how they get assigned.
All right, next question.
My name is Roz Stein. This is a very quick question. It seems to me that Springfield doesn't have the unhoused homeless problem that Eugene has, from what I can tell. Is that true? And if so, why? Why?
Well, real quick, it's not that we don't have a homeless issue. It's that we're focusing on children and families. So we've started at Catholic Community Services a day center for children and families. Part of the reason is because they show up at school and they've been unhoused. But also for other, we're willing to take others. I've talked to the superintendent of schools. We're willing to take children and families and try to sort of work on that. The other issue is we're in between two rivers. So where you see homeless, they're on the rivers many times, because I hear about it from John Brown, who many of you probably know, or anyone else who I personally am responsible possible because E-Web's water intake happens to be in Springfield, and when they camp on the river and leave needles or whatever, it ends up in the E-Web water supply. So it's a critical issue, and we're trying to find solutions for it, and we are working on it constantly.
All right, looking great. Next.
I'm Paul Thompson. This is a question for Larry. Back in the beginning of the presentation, you listed the cities in Oregon that met that 8-point criteria that you had. Eugene was conspicuous by its absence in that. Does that mean that it was evaluated and rejected? Does that mean it didn't apply? There's no hope? What's the scoop?
Hope springs eternal, and let this be a challenge to the city of Eugene, because no, they have not been rejected. And I know that there are a number of things that are happening that would meet some of the criteria, but there has not been any formal application to date by the city of Eugene in terms of the age-friendly network. That said, we encourage the city, the county, and frankly, a lot of communities across our state to step up and go ahead and tackle this. Thank you.
All right, next question.
Hi, James Barber, Springfield City Club. This is for Mayor Lundberg. We're interested in what the plan is for the mobile home parks in Glenwood. You kind of touched a little bit on those. Can those be saved, or what will be available for the people in them?
The mobile home parks in Glenwood have been there forever, for the most part, and you cannot move many of those homes because if they're prior 1976, you simply can't move them. That's why I took on the, we need to have a solution for mobile home parks. So what we have now is all of the agencies across the state and their federal agencies, their local agencies, that will come together the minute we hear of some sort of a closure and try and figure out, St. Vinny's wants to buy mobile home parks and rehab mobile homes. There's the option of people want to go into some other kind of housing. We want to have that solution, but part of it's working with mobile home park owners, many of which don't live in the state. We don't have a lot of information about it. So it's an uphill battle, but we have a toolkit now that'll help guide us through a process to help folks because we don't want them not taken care of.
Thank you. Next question.
Jerry Smith, City Club member. This is for the AARP. Seniors are moderately safe because there's an income guarantee beyond a certain age. Many of your members don't have guaranteed income at 50. And I face the homeless here in Eugene. I've got to tell you, a huge portion of the homeless population are those people who are 50 or between 50 and 62 or whatever age they might get some income. Do you think AARP should advocate for people rather than let the age go up for retirement, make the age go down like the job market is going?
Well, first of all, we do oppose raising the retirement age under the Social Security Act. But I think back to your critical point here. A couple things we've done here at the state level in terms of legislation. General assistance, which at one time had been cut, we've advocated along with other human service organizations to restore and actually increase. The other, and I'm proud of the AARP Foundation. That is a part of AARP. I work for the 501c4, if you're into that. The C3 nonprofit has volunteers that do tax assistance. And again, whether homeless or not, even if I don't owe any taxes, the earned income tax credit can be a lifesaver. And fortunately, many, many Oregonians and across the nation, folks do not apply. So that's another kind of aspect to how to secure at least some funding that's there for the taking if we'd only advocate and support individuals to do that. So appreciate your asking.
Last question.
Ruth Miller, I've been a member for quite a while, and our question is, and I'm not sure who's the expert on this, can you give us some examples of how a tax break would help having an affordable house? And be specific, because I think we keep hearing this but not knowing exactly what you're meaning and you're going to try to, I guess, have happen.
Well, I guess I referred earlier in my remarks to carrots to go along with sticks when it comes to developers in terms of promoting development, particularly for middle housing. You know, I call it the missing middle, when it comes to more expediently building and taking the risk when it comes to offering. Because right now it's like, well, I'll build a mega mansion. I'll sell the million-dollar home. So that's one. But the other thing I was referring to later was around our current property tax system. And in Oregon, living in a fixed income, and it's really all ages, but think about the fact that if I'm on a fixed income now and I may not, I'm equity rich, I'm sitting on a home that's really increased in value, it's capped in terms of my assessment, but I can't afford that property tax now. All I can do is maybe defer it for a while if I qualify. Again, having some type of a systematic approach to relieve me of some of that burden. And other states have actually done that. So those are the two examples I can think of.
Mayor Lundberg, you have anything to add?
Well, we are currently looking at our, what we call them, system development charges and any of the other fees that are related to building housing. And that's a big piece of whether or not a developer can pencil out housing. So those, that although they're not directly tax credits, they are a type of fee. And if you look at the system development charges that are tacked on to costs and our development code fees, and we're looking at being able to give people breaks depending on what kind of housing they built. So that's, it is a way to help make affordable housing for people.
Before we thank our guests today, there are a few quick reminders. The City Club is very appreciative of our sponsors, including Duvall's Cobb Attorneys, Maryland Milne Public Relations Services, KLCC 89.7 Radio, and thank you to KLCC for airing our programs on Monday at 6:30 p.m. and to Community Television of Lane County for televising recent City Club programs at noon. Thank you to Attune Foods and Cherise Tony for hosting this week's meeting of the course for teachers on the local economy that City Club co-sponsors with the Eugene Chamber of Commerce, Lane ESD, Elaine Workforce Partnership, This course helps identify potential jobs for high school students graduating. We look forward to seeing you next week here at the Baker Center at noon on March 10th. The title is Cruelty to Women, Here Now, with speakers Rachel Collins, Engagement Manager of Women's Space, and Dr. John Davis, a nationally recognized speaker and author. Additional information in about future programs can be found at www.cityclubofeugene.org. Special thank you to Brenda Wilson for being our very skilled moderator. Please a round of applause to Brenda. Thank you. And of course to our main speakers, Jerry Cohen and Springfield Mayor City Christine Lundberg. Thank you so much. My name is Juan Carlos Valle, and this concludes today's program. Thank you.